It should be obvious that we cannot solve a crisis with the same methods that got us into it in the first place.
This is a last chance saloon. Because if we don't really take the decisions that are vital now, it's going to be almost impossible to catch up.
We will end the moratorium on extracting our huge reserves of shale, which could get gas flowing as soon as 6 months.
If unprecedented changes are not made and made soon, there will be irreversible damage to the planet.
Zero carbon. East Hall.
Hello and welcome to Zero Carbonista Series 4 Fool's Gold. I'm Ian Collins and this is the UK's number one environment-based podcast. If it's green, it is in. And Dale, we would be failing like utter fools. In fact, we could almost do an entire episode just on the weather.
Oh man, it's incredible. I mean, the climate apocalypse is what it looks like to me, and it's right here, right now. It's shocking. And how anybody can still deny that, and I'm thinking of people like Mike Graham, who I was just talking to on his new TV show, how anybody can say this stuff is made up and exaggerated by the BBC and scientists and stuff like that. Honestly, I don't understand, and I think actually it's dangerous, and I've said it before, it should be illegal.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, and we've got some questions on all of this as well, and they come through all the time. Just to define, we know it's hot. The common response that comes through is, yeah, no shit, Sherlock, it's summer.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this is...
it's like denial bingo, this. You can keep doing this all day long. It was 1976.
It's denial Groundhog Day because they say the same things all of the time, you know, and the statistics just keep racking up. We had the hottest July globally ever, or the hottest temperature ever globally. That was the first week of July. And these temperatures were the highest in 120,000 years, not just since recordings were been made, which was like 1850. I mean, you know, they're relatively off the charts. And you can see what's happening in Europe now, you know, wildfires and incredible oppressive heat, record numbers of people in A&E in Italy and stuff like that. A report out last week saying 60,000 people in Europe died last year from these extreme weather events. And it will be more this year because it will be hotter. And then a NASA scientist comes out a couple of days ago and says, this is the coldest summer you will ever experience. If you're alive today, this is the cold one. Remember it, because they're only getting hotter from here. And that's a stark warning. That's an incredible warning. Honestly, we've been talking about this for a long time in the environment movement, me and you, but in the environment movement, about how bad things could be. We're seeing it now, and it's just beginning.
What happens? And again, these are the sort of questions that are coming through. What happens if next year it's not as hot?
they will say that.
What do we do with all of this kind of energy and information, which I think is, you know, clearly by anybody's standards, it's helpful and almost crucial to talk about this, which is why this podcast comes into its own at times like this. But people who don't follow this story say, well, hang on, two things. If it's the hottest for 120,000 years, that means it has been this hot before and we cope with it.
No, it means it's never been this hot before in 120,000 years. Or, yeah, maybe what you're saying is before 120,000 years ago it was hotter. I don't know how they arrived at that date. Honestly, cut some kind of, you know, geological kind of record carbon dating. Who knows? But look, if it's not as hot next year, we should be happy. But I know what will happen. People like, you know, Mike Graham, people on the right wing of media and TV will say, see, all of that stuff was just scare stories. It's not that bad. It's just another summer. But the data screams at us the complete opposite. This is a trend. The trend is upwards. Even if you have the odd blip downwards, the trend line is upwards. You know, we're heading for off the charts. We're heading for 3 degrees global temperature rise. We think 1.5 will be bad. That's what was set at the Paris Accord. That won't be great, but it will be livable. 3 degrees, we don't really know. Any moment now, we could trigger a runaway event, a positive feedback loop of climate events that feeds itself and just drives this thing, accelerates it. Beyond what we're seeing today and the scenes we're seeing today, I mean, they're just crazy when you look at them, the vast scale of wildfires and simply unlivable conditions for so many people. Anybody with a health condition, you know, is really at risk from the temperatures that we're seeing today across the world. Hundreds of millions of people are affected right now by extreme heat.
Another point that keeps coming through from people saying, well, hang on, we use less of all the shit that causes this. So why are we concerned? Surely it's getting better. The very thing that is claimed to cause this, we use less of. So why is it getting worse?
I think that's to not understand the very simple premise of all of, of this. It's not driven by what we use immediately. It's been driven by the last 150, 200 years of the mass burning of fossil fuels. That's building up in the atmosphere. CO2 is building up. That's working like a blanket to heat and eventually cook the planet. And so what we do now, maybe less than what we did 10 years ago, but it's not enough. We've got to get down to net zero so that we stop increasing the problem. Once we get there, we've then got to reduce what's in the atmosphere to try and dial it back a bit. But it really doesn't matter if we're using less than we used 10 years ago. If we're still pumping the stuff into the atmosphere, we're adding to the problem, which is where this whole harebrained scheme from Rishi Sunak to drill in the North Sea comes in. Why on earth, in the face of all of this, is he wanting to drill for more fossil fuels to throw on this fire? And this week, the OBR, which is the Office of Budget Responsibility, reported to the government to say it will cost twice as much to stick with fossil fuels as it will cost to transition to green energy. So there's no economic argument for what he's doing at all. In fact, quite the opposite. The economic argument is also the climate argument. Move to green energy as fast as possible.
Can I just put my I love Rishi Sunak hat on for a second?
Yeah, go for it.
I found a wink. I had to send off for it to the Conservative Party to get one, but it arrived this morning, so I'm just going to lob that on.
Even then, I bet they had to hunt around for it.
Yeah, I think they made it. I don't think it existed. But they said, for this podcast, we'll make anything. So they sent it over. It's firmly affixed on said head. The question is this. Look, so I'm Rishi Sunak. I don't want to go down in history as the twat that f***ed up the entire planet. Why would I not be adhering to what you're saying, Dale, if it was true? Why would I be drilling for oil if I thought it was going to cause more of a problem? Why would I want to cull humans and the planet and all its plant life just for the sake of what? What's in it for me?
Re-election.
Well, he's got all chance of that, isn't he?
Exactly, really? And he's desperate. And so they're turning this into a culture war. And that's all they've got. And it's so dangerous and damaging for our country for them to do that, because he knows it's not economic. He knew before the OBR told him this week, he knew that. He knows about the climate science. He's advised about it. That's clear to him. He's not a stupid man. He might be stupidly rich and he might do stupid things, but he's not a stupid man.
Yeah.
It's all about politics. It's about creating a gap between the Tories and Labour on a new front, which is the climate and the green economy. And there is no other possible answer to that question.
And just to tie in with that, big oil companies continue to roll back on climate promises. There's another worrying headline. We've seen a little bit of a build-up of these headlines, haven't we, recently? But that seems to be where we're at, where companies go, yeah, don't worry, we're on it, we're with you, we're moving in the right direction, and then nothing happens.
That's right. Like the head of Shell, I think in our last episode, we talked about him speaking out about the fact that the investment in green energy wasn't going fast enough. And then you look at what Shell are doing, and it's about 1.5% of all the money they spend is being invested in green energy. The rest is in fossil fuels. You know, but these people take their cues from politicians. So when people like Rishi Sunak say we need decades of transition from fossil fuels, they're encouraged to say the same thing and to keep on doing what they're doing.
Here's a headline, though. I know you're going to love this. Solar energy beamed to Earth could be cost competitive, according to the European Space Agency. I love them over there.
I love it, right? I love the headline. I haven't read the article. Cost competitive with what? Solar energy made on the ground? Let's just make it here, right? Because it's already the cheapest form of energy we can make. What more do we want? It's already miles cheaper than fossil fuels, you know, and the investment gives us 2.5 times as many jobs and twice as much GDP growth. Why do we need to send rockets into space to build this stuff, this sci-fi beaming of solar power into space? And what could go wrong with that, right?
Yeah.
What are these guys? They just dream stuff up, don't they, in a cupboard somewhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. In terms of, you know, renewables, though, I mean, solar and wind, and I know we kind of sort of labour this point a bit, and I feel almost stupid labouring it, but it is worth saying for anyone at the back who's, you know, new to this or slow to this or impenetrable to this, it's just worth reiterating that why would you want to drill for oil with big plant and machinery and the dirt and the grime and the filth and the expense and the pollution, when the sun and the wind, in terms of their initial source, are free? Now, that's surely, like, a six-year-old would get that, right? Every time I say that sentence, I think I've got something wrong. But that's what you have been arguing against. Like, it's like saying, no, that is a black wall. No, it's a white wall. No, it's black.
And that's
definitely white.
And that's a big hole in the ground. Why are we doing this?
Gee, right? Yeah.
But look, also, fossil fuels are a single-use fuel. It's like, it's not language you hear very often, but I think it's important that we make it stick. It's a single-use fuel. You burn it and it's gone. You've got to drill some more. Wind energy, solar power, all forms of renewable. The key is in the name. The name I used to find too long and boring, renewable energy. Do you know what I mean? But it's never going to run out, FFS. You know, that's it. It's forever fuel versus single-use fuel. Well, that's an easy choice, surely. And it's cheaper. This forever stuff is cheaper. I mean, you have to be mad to say, let's choose fossil fuels. Add in the climate crisis, and you have to be truly mad to choose fossil fuels.
We had a text from Mac in the week at work who said, if the planet is heating up, isn't that good news for solar panels? I like the logic, Dale.
No, it's not. It's not good news.
Well, I mean, it's more free juice, isn't it? I think that's his point.
It's not a radiation that's increasing. It's the amount of heat staying in the Earth's atmosphere, trapped under the blanket of CO2. So we're cooking ourselves in that. It's not about levels of irradiation. The higher they are, yes, the more solar panels perform. But actually, when solar panels get too hot, then they make less energy. Not that much less, but it happens.
Hi, I'm Mike Graham from Talk TV, and I've been asked to tell you about green issues and a new book called Manifesto. It's brilliant, apparently. Do you believe in climate change? I don't. Do you believe we all need to find a greener way of living our lives? Nope, I don't either. I think it's all a load of guff perpetuated by loony lefties and eco-zealots hell-bent on causing a nuisance. Do you believe we're all killing our beautiful planet? No. Neither do I, but I know a fellow who does. His name's Dale Vince. He's so convinced he's written a whole book about it called Manifesto. The Battle for Green Britain. It's part memoir, part handbook for changing the world and shaking it up, apparently. I won't be buying it, but you can if you want to waste your hard-earned cash. It's $4.99. Pretty cheap, isn't it? You must be wealthy as hell. According to this script, it's available now from fgr.co.uk/shop.
Here's a headline. Delia Smith thinks vegans are c***s.
Said no one ever.
She didn't actually say that. What she said was Delia Smith says vegan diets are wrong. Tell Delia Smith, Dale, have you ever shaken hands with the mighty Delia in a Norwich fixture anywhere?
I haven't, but we have sent some of our burgers to Norwich to be fed to players on training sessions, and they loved them. They wanted more.
That's what's pissed her off, because she likes to make the sausage rolls and cuts the oranges up for half time over there at the Canaries ground. And yet here you are, like, lobbing pies in her direction. what do you think she's getting at here when she says they're wrong?
What she's saying and what she's talking is just a load of guff, actually. She's saying that, you know, veganism is just simply wrong. Every part of her, everything inside her tells her that. And if you want to eat vegetables, that's okay, but don't claim you're helping the planet because you're not. That's just counter science, counter fact. You know, we know that animal agriculture is driving the climate crisis, not vegetable agriculture, animal agriculture. That's a fact. We know that it drives the human health crisis that we face in terms of diabetes, cancer, heart disease, all that kind of stuff. I mean, these are facts as well. I mean, she's just talking nonsense.
And she runs a shit football club.
Well, I wouldn't say that. You know, they're the plucky underdogs that keep getting into the Premier League and not staying there, don't they? And I quite like them for that. But, you know, Delia Smith has got a platform for being a famous teacher of basic cooking skills, I think she's described that. She's got a platform. She's using it for an entirely wrong purpose, just to spout some nonsense that she believes without having actually looked for any facts.
Yeah. And it's worth finishing on this point, Dale, because it kind of all comes back to everything we've been talking about. Top UK energy firms to warn Rishi Sunak, don't back off the green agenda. So you've got 100 of the UK's biggest energy companies. Mm. I'm going to say to the Prime Minister not to back off the green agenda after a report by the OBR, which you reference, warned of catastrophic effects on the economy of continued over-reliance on gas. Now, these are the people that would ordinarily be, you know, you might say stereotypically the friends of the Tories, big business, big companies. Mm. And they're telling him, don't back off.
Yeah. And, you know, this OBR report in the last few days is really important because of where it comes from and exactly what it says. But the numbers for a long time have been very clear. Investment in green energy is better for job creation and the growth of our economy. And of course, it's a long-term, forever-term form of fuel as opposed to fossil fuels. And what they're saying just makes perfect sense. But to have 100 of them saying it to Rishi Sunak all at the same time, you'd hope that he might just wake up to this and say, do you know what? Maybe I'm getting something wrong. But they go further, right? They pick up this line about the culture war. They say that's what they're worried about. He's creating a new front in the Tories' forever war, which is a culture war. And that's a big mistake. I mean, you know, I agree with them completely. And that's a rare thing, right, for me to agree with all of the energy companies in our country.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they're just stating a basic fact. I mean, there's not even anything controversial about this unless you're Rishi Sunak, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right. Or a certain part of the Tory party, because it's not all of them. We've got to remember, you know, there are a bunch of Tories that get the whole problem that we're facing.
Yeah,
Chris Skidmore, for example, you know. Anyway, there's a few of them.
There are. We should actually finish on this point. Woke Airlines are about to launch.
Woke Jet.
Woke Jet. Just give us an overview of this, because there's been a lot of publicity about it this week, and we spoke to you on the telly as well earlier this week on this point. The electric airline this is not just a notional idea, this is happening.
It's here, it's out in the world now. But look, this is a Daily Mail headline. It tells you everything you need to know about this culture war. Why, in the face of the announcement of an airline that will fly cleanly with no pollution at all, let alone CO2, but everything, why would you respond by calling it woke? Yeah. Really? Really? Is that all you've got? Right? Because you could complain, right? At the same time, it'll be the quietest flight you ever undertook. And for people living around airports, there'll be a lack of noise and a lack of smell. Anyway, the story. We launched EcoJet on Monday. We should be in the air in a couple of years with electric-powered airplanes. And, you know, we're planning to fly across Britain to begin with. Our first plane will have a 300-mile range. A year and a half later, 500, and we'll be flying to Europe as well. And we're throwing down the gauntlet to the industry that is going to be 10 years behind us. They're so unambitious. And we're saying, look, if we can do it, all right, what are you guys hanging around for? Aviation emissions are a really big deal, and we have a way now to clean them up. For me, it's the last piece, the final piece of the puzzle in how we get to live net zero without giving stuff up. We don't have to give up flying. We can fly zero carbon.
There it is. Succinct stuff. Let's just remind everybody as well, in a couple of weeks' time, 29th of July, live on the Ecotricity stage at WOMAD. I mean, we both love this weekend, Dale. It was incredible last year. There was an amazing crowd there. I'm sensing it's probably going to be just the same, possibly even bigger. A lot of things have happened in the last, well, we hope so. After having said that, it'd be shit, wouldn't it, if two people show up?
That'd be me and you.
Just me and you sitting there like two old tossers on the stage drinking cider.
I object to the old bit.
But it will be good, and we'll be taking questions, because I think that was one of the best bits last year, because we recorded it for a podcast and we're going to do it again this time.
Yeah.
And that was the sort of Q&A bit, which just kept going on and on because there were so many great questions.
It was a brilliant discussion, and then after that I think we shut down for the summer, don't we?
We do, yes. We've got next week, we've got a best of, and then we've got WOMAD, and then we've got a couple of weeks off. We're back with a special looking ahead to what we think might be happening, and then I think we're only off for 3 weeks, actually.
Oh, okay.
So it's not bad.
It'll go quick.
Where are you going? Greece? Italy?
Yeah, that's right. The climate front line. I've got to experience. No, I hate hot weather. The future's not looking good for me, is it?
It's hot now. It's only 20 degrees as well. Mm. That's in Kent. Love it. Dale, we'll speak next week.
Yeah, brilliant. See you.
That is it for this episode. Don't forget to follow this podcast on your podcast provider as well. Follow Dale on social media, twitter.com/DaleVince, facebook.com/DaleVince.
Zero. Carbon. East. Off.